So what I've learned from you today is just say yes. Say yes to opportunities.
To more things, for sure. Yeah. And expand your comfort zone. Do one thing every day that, like, you know, is a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Talk to a stranger, whatever the thing is. Maybe that's not a great one if you're a kid and don't talk to strangers or whatever. But, you know, do it safely, you know, where, like, live life. Put the bowling alley bumpers down for, like, you know, one frame or something like that and see what happens.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Rudardi, and today we are joined by the world's number one failure, Ben Currier. Ben, aka the failure guy, is an Excel expert, podcast host, and public speaker. He was fired from every job after college, but he has found success by sharing his stories of failure with others. His podcast reaches a global audience and ranks in the top 0.2%, 0.2%, y'all, of all podcasts. Ben has 15 years of experience in corporate finance and is a four-time Microsoft MVP for Excel. He has created one of the top online Excel courses and has over 25 million minutes of Excel training content. Despite his early career struggles, Ben has learned from failure and now inspires others through his podcast and public speaking. Welcome, Ben. Please don't tell me we're going to spend the whole hour talking about spreadsheets.
We definitely won't, but I love how much you messed up the intro, and I am happy to be here.
Blooper
is baked into the episode now. I like it.
Blooper reel.
So, I don't want to talk about spreadsheets. Nobody ever wants to talk about spreadsheets, but actually, okay. One time I did accidentally. Sometimes I'll join a meeting, and I don't know if I'm the host of my own podcast. I'm guesting on someone else's. I'm just talking to somebody, so I thought we were just going to chat about some stuff, but he's a big Google Sheets guy. And I ended up being on like a YouTube live sheet talking thing. So besides that, where we did talk about spreadsheets for an hour, most people don't want to do that. So yeah, I'm happy to talk about anything else.
So is your lack of scheduling and making notes on your calendar the reason why you're the number one failure guy?
No, definitely not. It's
okay,
just
table that. Let's put a pin in that because I have a question I need to ask you first. Please tell us your story. How did you become the world's number one failure guy?
Okay, so I'd say it took me probably five jobs of being fired before I realized I was fired from all my jobs, because in corporate America, a lot of times you can lie to yourself. You can lie in future interviews and stuff like that. So I was always telling some story about how I was pivoting in my career or whatever. I'd make up some things to explain the gaps in my, employment history. Either I'm moving across the country or whatever the thing is. And then after five of them, I was like, oh, wait, I didn't choose any of these. They were not more than one person things. It wasn't like being laid off. I've been actually fired from all my jobs. So I'm like, okay, I should probably do some investigation as to what's going on there. And I was reading a lot of self-help books. And unfortunately, I wasn't seeing myself put a lot of the improvements into action. But I did read, especially in this one book called Mindset by Carol Dweck, where she talks about a fixed and a growth mindset. And basically how much better off people are with the growth mindset, meaning that they can do anything and achieve anything rather than, you know, having more self-limiting beliefs. And it talked about the importance of failure and getting comfortable with failure. And so I was like, all right, I'll go get a failure license plate, which I have, it's downstairs. And I'll put that on my car. And then every day I'll have to see that. And it'll be a good idea, I thought, for some reason. I was even surprised that it was available at the DMV, which is dumb because I don't know why I was surprised. Like, meaning my relationship with failure is a lot different than most people's. And so when I talk about it, I'm usually talking about it in a positive light. And I realized that a lot of people don't like that F word all that much. And so a lot of times I will get people who are resistant to even calling something a failure. And then I got to do a whole dance around the subject until we can actually talk about it being a mistake, a learning experience, whatever the thing is. But I had no plan. I had no plans to do a podcast. I had no plan. I was going to maybe write a book called The Power of Effing Up, which I would have done the swear version of, kind of like The Subtle Art of Not Giving A. I don't know if I can swear on your podcast, so I'm just going to avoid
it. Yeah, go ahead. You can swear. You can swear.
So I was going to call it The Power of Fucking Up, or Why I Was Happy I Was Fired from Every Job I've Ever Had, or something to those effects. But I was like, okay, this is just an idea for a book, but also I only know my one brand of failure, which is getting fired. So I should interview other people about their failures. And so I decided it's not specifically successful people. You don't have to be successful to be interviewed for it, as long as you're comfortable with talking about failure. But ideally, it's people who struggled through and, you know, showed some resiliency and got to the other side. And so if you want to be like the world's number one accountant, there's a lot of competition on Google. Number one failure, pretty easy to get there. So my original goal was unofficially to have Alexa answer my name when you asked it who the world's number one failure is. For the longest time, didn't know how to answer the question at all. But if you ask it the right way, it will say my name now. So that has happened. That doesn't do anything for me. And no one's really searching that term besides me and anyone I talk to. But it was just a funny little goal to motivate me to keep going with it.
I got to know. I have got to know. I don't have an Alexa, but I can do this, right? Hold on. I got to do it. Who is the world's number one failure?
According to Wanderlust Worker, one, Abraham Lincoln.
This is the old, if you say failure guy.
Dude, if you have to share the stage with somebody, I think Abraham Lincoln is a pretty cool guy to share your stage with, right? You have to be up there with Abraham Lincoln as the world's number one failure.
I wonder why he's up there. I mean, he had a lot of adversity.
His political career before he became president, he lost. And yeah, he did fail at a lot of things before he became president. But I think he succeeded at something that was very important and very pivotal in the history of the United States and the world. So yeah, it's pretty cool to be up there with him. All right, did you finish your story or did I get overwhelmed by the failure thing?
No, I'm just saying whenever I find out the right phrasing, which usually if you put the word guy in there, you'll get it for sure. But if you don't, it's a crapshoot. But I also ask people all over the world, because if I'm going to be the world's number one failure, it has to be in Japan. It has to be everywhere. So I was just making sure. Michigan would be where we're checking.
You got to work out Michigan.
Yeah. But I like that having something as stupid as that as a goal.
Yeah.
Is something enough to drive me. And one thing that's definitely helped, and the thing that comes up as a result, is IMDb, because you can put your podcast on IMDb, like I mentioned. Yeah.
This is how we met each other.
Yeah. And since Amazon owns IMDb now and they own Alexa, I think especially them two are talking with each other and giving the right answer. Because unofficially, I wanted the robot to say my name.
I love it. I love it. So let's talk about IMDb. Why do podcasts need to be on IMDb? And that is a total non sequitur there. No one is going to, from your intro and from the very beginning of this conversation, no one knew we were going to go there.
Yeah. So what you can do is if you have a podcast, you don't need to pay to account on IMDb, but you can put your podcast on IMDb. If you want a free resource, it's Audio Linked, LINKED, kind of like LinkedIn, audiolinked.com. It's just my website where I put a how-to guide. There's no ads or anything. It'll just tell you how to do it. And so the benefits are, if you want to rank for something like who's the world's number one failure or any of your things, the website IMDb, which is the Internet Movie Database, it's typically used for like movies, TV shows, and things like that. But they recently opened it up for music videos, podcasts, commercials, and other things that are not your typical long form movie or TV show. And so the great thing about it is you can give not only your guests credit for being on the episode, like you can make them a person on IMDb if they don't exist yet. You can offer it to your guests as you bring them on. You can say, by the way, this will give you an IMDb credit. But you can also, if you have editors, sound editors, or any other people in your production staff, you can credit them. So I'm the director, executive producer. I'm an actor as failure guy. I'm not myself. They don't want to be a failure forever. So you can do all sorts of different things, including they have a really high page authority. I think it's like 95 page authority. And so you can link to your own sites. You can link to your guest sites. You can have taglines and things like that. And it all helps with your SEO, and it's free. And it's a good way to give credit to people. And also, like, if so, I had Carol Baskin on the podcast, and William Hung. And so if you go to any of their IMDb pages and look under self, you'll see my podcast there. So it's a nice thing to have if you get anybody who's notable or at all already on there. It'll just bump up the popularity of your thing.
Cool. I have interviewed quite a few people that have IMDb profiles, none of them at that level. But it is kind of cool to then click it, you know, you add them to as a guest on your show, and then you click their name, and you can see everything else they've done. So yeah. It's nice the way that database is linked. And you know, it's a database, so you know something a little bit about databases.
That's true. Yep. And the only thing I've had rejected so far is I tried to give Arnold Schwarzenegger a special thanks because we did terrible impersonations of him in one episode, and that got rejected. But because other than that, it should have been rejected. It should not have gone there. But other than that, I've not really had much that didn't get past the folks. So now my stuff gets accepted much more easily. It's kind of like Wikipedia. I think once they see that you contribute enough, they're less stringent on some of the stuff. But it's fabulous. And if anybody, the more episodes you have, the harder it is because you got to put them, you don't have to put them all on there. So I'd say if you have a ton of episodes, just put your favorite ones or the ones with the most memorable people. But the earlier you start, the better. The only thing is it has to be released already in order for you to put it on there.
If it's tip is make it a habit, because Candace didn't make it a habit. Now it's a little behind.
So mine even automatically does it now. I publish it, I don't know. I don't know how. Maybe because it goes to Audible and Amazon owns Audible. But now it's frustrating because if I change the name of the title of the episode, like before it hits Apple, and maybe it published just to my thing, it'll show up wrong in IMDb. And I'm like, so I have to go correct things. It's like not how it usually works. But I think it's because either they're sick of me sending it in every time or they just started automating more of it. I'm not sure. But see if it shows up automatically for you, because I wasn't sure why. It was showing up instantaneously before it even hit Apple's directory. Why I knew it was probably through Audible, because they most things refer to Apple as like the source.
Yeah, maybe you have a better, maybe you linked to your Audible link.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I didn't do anything different.
Now I'm very curious. I'm very curious because I show up on Audible. I do. So I'm very curious.
Yeah. I'm annoyed though, because it shows up and then I got to change it. It's a little bit different than my usual thing. So. I'm not annoyed. I'm just confused. I want to figure out how it gets there. So it must be automated because it happens like immediately. So
I was talking to somebody recently about SpaceX. Oh, speaking of famous people, I was actually speaking to the director of the Vatican Observatory recently about the SpaceX rocket that just launched. And I'm going to name drop. You did. So I get to too.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how the SpaceX flight recently exploded in midair and that everybody was talking about how it was a big failure and SpaceX was all excited about the explosion. And I think you have the same mindset as SpaceX, which is an engineering mindset, which is a science mindset, which is failure is good. Because if you don't have failure, that means you're not experimenting hard enough, that your theories aren't out there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You're not expanding your comfort zone. You're not doing things outside of the box. So two things I will rename drop real quick. So and by that I mean another name. I do a lot of AI artwork. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but recently Grimes, Elon's ex-wife and baby mama, who is a EDM artist, she was holding this prompt jam on Discord, and so thousands of people were generating AI art for her and the founder of Midjourney, which is the name of the AI art platform. But they were liking what I was doing, so they brought me up on stage. I got to talk to her, so Elon's ex-wife and the founder of the AI art platform, about some of the stuff I was making, which was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Not at all relevant, besides the fact that it's Elon's ex-wife. But I was just excited to talk to her. And so I agree with the failure thing in terms of, so I just started doing stand-up comedy. I've done 8 now open mics, and I'd say 2 of them were probably bombs, as in didn't go as planned, or I didn't get as many laughs as I wanted, which is pretty decent out of the amount of them there are. But since there's so much failure baked into stand-up comedy, and you have to bomb them, like no matter what comedian you talk to, they'll say that they've had nights where they didn't get laughs. So like doing things like that, even the ones where I mess up and I bomb, I'm excited because I get to know what I did wrong or figure out some, because when everything goes right, you don't learn as much as you do from when things go wrong. Like earlier, I mentioned I had an episode that I released that was only 20 minutes long, even though it was an hour long conversation. I've always since then looked for that recording in the top left hand corner of Zoom and made sure that's on if I'm in the middle of a meeting, because that's what the mistake was there that I made, is that I didn't double check that we were recording again. So I made sure when we rejoined here that yours is recording.
Yeah.
And but I learned so much more from messing up, and I learned way more even than like
thanks,
I
saved dude. The audience never would have known that we had that blip if you hadn't just called it out.
You can edit it out. I mean, I'll just make it difficult for you. Like even from editing, so like all the mistakes I've made in terms of interrupting people or doing all sorts of weird things that I end up disliking, like I seem to only be able to learn from my own mistakes, even interviewing other people, which is what I'm doing for the podcast. I don't learn as much as I do from actually messing up myself. I feel like sometimes it's the only way I can learn is by doing it the wrong way or just trying. But when things go all smoothly, you don't really learn what about it went well.
Yeah. It's really hard as a parent to let your kids make mistakes. Yeah. And I think that maybe a whole generation, my generation of parents, really screwed that up because we didn't want our kids to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And look what's happened.
Yeah, you can kind of go the other way, like wanting to make things as least painful as possible for your kids. And I think it's the founder of Spanx has some speech that she gives where she talks about her parents and how at the dinner table, her dad would ask her what she failed at that day.
Oh, wow.
And like encouraged them to have something to say that they tried and didn't succeed at. But
I love that question.
Yeah. You can probably watch her thing and get a more accurate thing retelling of it. Cause I might not be right, but whatever her name is from Spanx.
I'll find it. I will find it, and it will be in the show notes, y'all. And I'm going to watch it because that sounds like something I need to see. I am a fan of failure. I learned so much. You know, I've been in business with my husband for 25 years and on my own for 5 years. I mean, my husband and I are business partners, but I have my thing that I do, and he has his thing that he does now. But, you know, 25 years of owning your own business, you make a lot of mistakes. You know, and you learn from those mistakes. And we used to call it throwing darts at the wall. Mm-hmm. Now, you can have a strategy. And if your strategy is throwing darts at the wall, great. But even if you have a strategy, you aren't
on your aim.
You aren't always going to get it right. Right. You aren't always going to get it right. And there's so many variables. I like to talk about marketing and archery being very similar. I have an archery analogy for marketing. So when you are pulling the string back, or the pulling back the string and holding the bow, pulling back the string, you pull it back as far as you can and you aim, and then you release and it hits the target or not. And then you have to keep adjusting until you get it right. That's the very synopsized version of that story. But it's all about form and wind, and how you're feeling that day, and how strong your shoulder is, which, you know, is the content. Your shoulder, you could say, is the content. And the arrow, you could say, is, are you shooting at the right people? Is the target the right client? You know, there's the whole archery analogy. I should write.
Are you creating enough tension?
Yeah. Are you creating enough tension? Right. Is a lot of people are tempted to aim down here or to aim up here. No, you got to aim right here. You know, there's a whole, it's place everything. All of that goes into whether or not the arrow hits the target and whether or not it hits the bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
do you do much archery in real life?
Not anymore. I was a certified archery instructor. Could you tell by the way?
I could tell by the fact that you got really deep into it.
I got really deep into it. But I don't shoot anymore, but from the age of 4, I was shooting a bow. Some kids have swings in their backyard. Some kids have sandboxes in their backyard. My entire childhood, we had an archery range in our backyard.
That's awesome.
I know.
If you remind me, I have a gift for you at the end of this.
Oh, ooh, I like gifts.
Gratitude, right?
Yeah.
Gifts.
Yeah. I love it.
I don't have to go grab it at the end.
I love it.
So what were we talking about? Anything specific about archery, messing up business mistakes.
All right. Let's strategize for the, or not strategize, but let's give the audience some tips for taking failure and turning it into lessons. How can we do that?
Well, first of all, do more things that are outside of your comfort zone. So if you let's say you're thinking about doing something and you get that tinge of fear that you might be approaching failure, you might be doing something that is a little bit outside of your comfort zone, outside of the box, might not work. If you're feeling that fear, I'd say to try as much as possible to use that fear as fuel to push you in the direction of the thing that you're trying to do. Because as long as you're not hurting anybody or doing anything self-destructive, that fear usually is because you're stepping outside of your comfort zone and doing something that you're not, that you haven't yet done. And then I'd say if you're in the middle of experiencing failure or if you're not succeeding at the moment, it's perfectly fine to grieve and and experience that failure. But one of the most important things is to make sure that you don't kind of, men in black yourself about it and forget what happened. You want to make sure that you extract, because you've already paid the price of the cost of the failure. You want to make sure that you can extract all the lessons that you can from that. So kind of having like a post-mortem almost on your failure, once you've given it time to not sting so much, because you don't want to immediately go past the feelings of actually experiencing it, but also at some point you need to go, okay, well, what happened there? What went wrong? How can I learn from it? And then I'd say one of the better things is in the future, let's say you have a successful podcast that you recorded a full episode and the last one you didn't. When you have the good one, pat yourself on the back and say, I wouldn't have maybe done this properly if I didn't have that prior mistake. And so try to recognize when you're having a success, what other mistakes you'd built on to kind of get to that point.
How many episodes have you recorded for your podcast?
Recorded? Probably 130-ish.
And how many have you released?
87.
Okay. And how many of them did you have to ditch, like throw away?
I have some that I haven't yet ditched. I'm just hoarding them still. But one, the guy changed the name of his app. So I'm definitely not releasing it, but it's my own fault. Some are a year old or more. I just haven't officially ditched them, so I don't feel bad. But there, let's say probably 10 out of the 40 plus will probably have to go because they're either irrelevant or the quality or something about it is just I'll have to either redo it, rebook it with that person, or just get rid of it and scrap it totally.
This is probably episode 180. I don't know the numbers because one of the things that I'm letting go of is the perfectionism of having to release my episodes in the same order I recorded them.
Something you did?
That's something I did. So now I'm releasing them in the order that I think they need to go in.
Gotcha.
And so I'm not numbering them anymore. So I don't know where we are, but I think you're about 180. Mm-hmm. And I screwed up your intro in three different places. Right? So repetition is great and you just have to let it go. If you screw up, you screw up. Failure is part of the process. And I'm sure that you have the same issue.
Yeah. One that I like to mention is Scott Guzzoli. I called him Scott Fuzzoli, which is like a bad fast food Italian place, depending on where you're living in the United States. But I leave that in and I leave it in. I mess up so many names that I know, and I know the name too, because I know him pretty well. But a lot of times I won't even try to look up the right pronunciation, like Stephen Levine. I said Levine, or it doesn't matter. I have the way to check these things out. A lot of times I will avoid doing research in some way, like in my brain, I'm trying to keep it less biased, but really I just am lazy. And so if I don't go hear all the things that they like to talk about, I won't necessarily be drawn towards talking about those things, but also I just don't like. I have a lot of my own episodes I haven't released.
Yeah,
I don't have time to listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yes, 50 that you haven't released.
40. I haven't. At one point it was 37, but I would just keep recording more. So
I don't guest on shows very often, but in the last couple of weeks, a couple of guest episodes where I was the guest have been released, and I haven't had a chance to listen to them, so I can say thank you to the host yet.
Well, and I feel one thing guilty. That I did recently, and I got the idea from, I'm not going to try to say his name, I'll forget it, but make a Spotify playlist of all your guest appearances, and then you can share that.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't done yet. So I recently went through all my guest appearances and added them to, if they were in Spotify, added them to a playlist that I could then share. Cause I was like, I don't have this documented really anywhere.
And you're the second person who suggested to do that. And I don't use Spotify to listen to podcasts. I use Good Pods because I love that.
I love Good Pods too. I was using Good Pods earlier to listen, but I'll just add it to.
Can you make a playlist on Good Pods?
Oh, I don't know. So what I mean is, like, I will make a short link to my Apple link and my Spotify link, because those are the two major ones
that
people listen to. And then I will personally listen to usually on Good Pods. But I do have Spotify Premium, so I figured I'd make a playlist of my guest appearances, because I don't know how you can do that on Good Pods, but you probably can create a collection or something. It might be called something else.
Good Pods is such a fun platform. If y'all in the audience, if you aren't listening to podcasts via Good Pods, you should, because it's a great way for you to talk to the host of the show. Like, chances are, if you leave a comment on one of my episodes, I'm going to comment back. Right. If you follow me, I'm going to follow you. So, because it's like Facebook for podcasting, only better.
Yeah. You know? I met at Podfest, JJ, who started it, was there. She's awesome. I got to meet her. And I've always liked Good Pods. It's nice. It's got a nice little commenting and functionality. And that's the one I go to usually. For a while, I was using Stitcher, but only because I was paying for the premium. So I didn't have ads on one of my favorite podcasts.
I was using Stitcher forever. And then they have my feed messed up, and they have the wrong artwork on my feed. And they won't let me log in to change it, even though I had an account. You know, a creator account. And so now I'm mad at Stitcher, so I don't want to listen to the podcast on Stitcher anymore. Isn't that petty of me?
No, I haven't those kind of beefs as well, where I just am like,
I mean, seriously, right, well, it's the wrong graphic.
It Why hurts do me you more not than it hurts. Right?
Yeah. Usually it hurts me more than it hurts them. Exactly. Exactly. But Good Pods is fun. Yeah, it's a great way to find new episodes. Okay, go ahead.
No, you're good. I'm just saying I agree. I was listening to Akimbo. One of the few podcasts I listened to is Seth Godin's Akimbo. And I was listening to that on Good Pods earlier.
Oh, I didn't know he had a podcast. I used to absorb everything that he put. And if he put something out, I would absorb it. But it's been a while.
You have got to check out Akimbo.
I have to catch up.
AKIMBO.
All right.
It's every Wednesday. He does not script a word of it. Per me asking him, he said he didn't, and basically it's always gold, so I'd say that's one of the ones I never miss. I'll catch up at some point. I mean, I'll miss it for a couple weeks, but I'll eventually catch up, but it's only like 30 minutes or less, and it's all him by himself and then answering questions from listeners, and I've had one or two questions answered on the podcast.
Have you? So how do you submit the question?
I think it's akimbo.link is where you go.
And then
I even mentioned my Failure Guy podcast. I was like, I'm starting a podcast called the Failure Guy Podcast, blah, blah, blah. And then I got a guest through that too, who reached out to me because I mentioned the name of it. But he had a really good analogy on failure and what to do.
I love that. I think he's like mega famous, but he's also mega approachable.
Yeah, I've done three of his workshops. It's Akimbo workshops, which there's like one on podcasting, one on being a creative, and then one on marketing. But I think they're all done now. I don't think they're doing those anymore. They just have the Alt MBA or something like that. But it's cool because you get to go on Zoom calls with them, stuff like that, or at least group ones. But there's a lot of cool ways of people holding each other accountable and trying to get progress done on certain things. I just like the way he thinks as someone who has to sell something at some point. I like the way that he thinks about the relationship between marketing and people.
Yeah. Yeah. And he always comes up with great analogies. Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty good. Okay, I want to talk about Excel for just a minute.
Perfect.
So is there anything about Excel that, what is something that you wish everybody knew about Excel that they don't know?
Well, I feel like a lot of people think it either is everything. It can do anything you want, absolutely all the things. So they're like so confused, they don't know where to start with it. Or they think they can do nothing because when you open it up, it's just a blank little thing and it looks really boring and ridiculous. So I'd say for the people who don't realize what it can do, if you do anything in finance or with numbers or anything at all with math, there's most likely a good way you can use Excel to make your life easier. But also for people who think you can do everything, there's probably a lot of times when that's not the solution to go to, and there's other things that'll do it easier. But I think the main thing would be, don't be scared of it, because it's not, it's actually making math easier for you. It usually makes your life easier. You'll save more time and things like that. But a lot of people just get scared, or they fall asleep halfway through the word Excel. So, you know, I try to figure out how to make it more enjoyable. I'm making a course right now for O'Reilly textbooks, and I'm trying to figure out how to make financial modeling more fun than just income statement, balance sheet, cash flow stuff, which is all very, very boring. And also it has to be specifically right. So I'm trying to figure out how to make it better, even if it's just putting Jim and Pam from The Office as characters or whatever the thing is, you know, like making any of it more enjoyable, some artwork, things like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be less in Excel when I'm showing things, more conceptually, because I say doing the impossible, making Excel fun, and it might be impossible, but I'm going to keep trying to do it in different ways. And I'm also making an escape room in Excel so that you can basically using AI artwork, telling a story, and you're solving a puzzle and escaping various, kind of like a choose your own adventure thing with Excel.
I'm in shock. That's brilliant genius. Holy moly.
It's on Holdish, or at least I have a class in Canada that's working on it right now, helping me out with it. But yeah, that's an idea, because I can make all sorts of crazy things in AI art. You come up with a story, you come up with math problems that are more riddle-ish, and it's more like a game than your XYZ company selling a widget or.
But if you solve the problem in the spreadsheet, you get to the next level. That's really cool.
And I got approved to teach on OutSchool, which is ages 3 to 18. So I had to do like all this child online privacy protection stuff, COPPA or whatever. So meaning I'm not sure what age specifically it would be good for, but anyone in the younger demographic too would probably enjoy that a lot more. And
I can totally see you teaching kids.
Yeah. So as of April 27th, I incorporated a 501c3 nonprofit in Kansas City called Pure Creative Art, where we talk about art and technology and whatnot. So I have a nonprofit that I'm the president, founder, treasurer, vice president, all the spots that I'm going to be hopefully teaching some folks. I'd say probably the lower income demographic. I'm not sure if it'll be children or adults, but about art and technology and things like that, because there's a lot of cool things going on, and a lot of times people don't have access to it or access to the info about it.
Yeah.
But also I joke that I've already had an LLC that's a nonprofit for so many years that I still have a regular one, but I just have wanted to do more things on that path. And I was like, you know what? I'll just fail it till I nail it, and I'll start in a 501c3. So figure out what's going on there. But
fail it till you nail it.
Yes. I don't like fake it till you make it. I don't like fake it till you make it, because it's all about faking it and imposter syndrome. But fail it till you nail it is going to be likely the name of the book that I will be writing.
I have a confession, and listener, I apologize, because this confession might include you. I have been all about personal branding, because I thought it was really important to differentiate yourself with your personal brand. And then I saw an episode of South Park where they were making fun of personal brands. And I realized just how ridiculous that is. That whole fake it till you make it thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the fail it till you nail it.
Yeah, because that's what you do, is you just mess it up until you figure out how to do it right.
Yeah.
But it's funny because in my first public speech, and I'm doing more public speaking now, but I said, it's put up on the slide. I said, fake it till you make it. And like one person started clapping because they liked that. And then I'm like, I hate this saying. And I felt bad for the person who, this is one person who like was jazzed about it. And then I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's not really my thing.
That's the problem that a lot of people have with affirmations, I am statements, because they feel like they're lying to themselves. So I figured out a way to turn those lies into truths just by the way that you phrase it. I did a lot of, I combine a whole bunch of different, my keynote that I give most often is this topic, but I combine a lot of different theories and ideas and, you know, and turn it into one thing that really works. And because I am statements are like, they are lies. I am not a mega millionaire. You know, I'm not wearing a size 10 and I look fantastic in a bikini. Why am I lying to myself? And that's the fake it till you make it thing, but fail it till you nail it. Why am I so thin? You know, I'm failing it until I figure out how to do it. Right. I've been failing at being thin and now I'm getting it right. You know, I don't know why I always come back to weight loss examples when I talk about affirmations. Is that subliminal?
Well, you're looking in the mirror probably too, as part of it, right? We're always looking.
No, I never look in the mirror when I say my affirmations because I'm looking in the future. I'm looking at the future.
Don't they say to do it in front of a mirror?
Oh, yes, yeah, no, I think that's bullshit.
I picture people doing it in front of a mirror.
That's bullshit. That's that guy who was a senator. He became a senator from Minnesota, and he was on Saturday Night Live. Curly hair. Oh, man, what is his name?
Al Franken?
Al Franken. That's an Al Franken bit.
I forgot what we were even saying. What did I say? What was an Al Franken bit?
The I am statements. Gosh darn it, I like myself.
What is it? I'm smart, I'm funny, and gosh darn it, people like me.
People like me, that's it.
Yeah. Like that?
That's it.
Stuart Smalley, I think, or something like that.
No, I don't remember.
Everyone's yelling at their thing. Like
the Al Franken I am statement meme will be in the show notes, y'all.
But I think the same thing you're saying, or instead of I am, you could say I will be a millionaire or whatever.
I have a better way. It's you.
Why am I such a millionaire?
You phrase it as a question. I learned this from a guy named Noah St. John. So you phrase it as a question. Instead of saying affirmations, you ask yourself affirmations, and an affirmation forms the idea in your mind. So when you say, why am I a millionaire? Your brain goes to work and starts to answer the question.
Why am I not a millionaire?
No, why am I a millionaire?
That's even more confusing to me.
Because then your brain is like, okay, the reason why you are wealthy is because you purchased a house and you didn't over mortgage. And that created generational wealth through the mortgage. You invested your money, you started a business, you come up with all these ways in your head to make money by answering the question, why am I a millionaire? And then eventually when you start taking inspired action on those answers that your brain produces, that's when the money starts to come in. So it's the inspired action that leads to the affirmation. Gotcha. So it's a process. Just staring at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm a millionaire. I'm a millionaire. You're never going to become a millionaire. You don't do anything until you take action. You have to fail, right? You have to fail over and over again before you win.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I wonder if you have thoughts on this. I was thinking about this the other day. People who get their Oscars on their first or second film, how many of them do you ever see in a movie again? Adrian Brody. Right?
The pianist? Is that what it was that he wanted?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I think it's the pianist.
I don't know. So your basic question is like, if you knock it out of the park immediately, do you rest on your laurels kind of thing, or do you come out with the same tenacity in the future.
Well, I want to hear your thoughts on that. What do you think?
I mean, it would depend. I think, well, we know Leonardo DiCaprio didn't win one for the longest time. He's done a lot of great stuff. I don't know if we'd have to do like a, we'd have to get Excel about it. We'd have to like look up people and see how they did, because I have no idea. I just know anecdotally what I would think.
The database dude wants the data before he comes up with an answer. Yeah, okay, well, that makes sense.
I don't know if they are statistically more or less likely to win. It's probably you'll have like the one hit wonders, you know, just like a music that will do a good thing, but like. Like then a guy who's played Napoleon Dynamite, you don't hear about him that much, John Heder or whatever. He did some other things, but like he was really good for that role. Maybe sometimes they just like are good for this one thing.
Yeah.
And they're not a great broad range actor, or people don't want them as that or something like that. But I think I wouldn't say getting denied of an award is a good thing. Necessarily, but it doesn't hurt to keep you resilient and striving towards it. So
I don't know.
I wouldn't wish to not win the first time, you know?
So this is nothing like the Oscars, but my daughter's 24. So this was years ago. This is 10 years ago, probably. No, 8 years ago. Hold. 24. I don't know. I can't do 16? Math in my head. She was 16. Yeah, she was about 16 when she stopped being in Girl Scouts. So from age 7 to age 16, she was in Girl Scouts, which meant mommy was in Girl Scouts, right? And I did a lot of really amazing things for the Girl Scouts because I'm a natural born leader. I mean, I'm not bragging. It's just true. I'm a natural born leader. And when things needed to get done, I got stuff done because I get stuff done. And
cookies. Too. A lot of cookies.
but I fully expected to get the award for leader of the year, Girl Scout leader of the year, and I never did. Not once did I ever get leader of the year. And then my daughter wasn't in Girl Scouts anymore, so there's never ever going to be an opportunity for me to get leader of the year, even though I probably deserved it more than any other leader.
In my book you are the leader of the year for the Girl Scouts. But
you know what the lesson there is? To do the work anyway, because I got if the award didn't exist, I would have been doing the work anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so do the work anyway. If it makes you happy, do it anyway. The award is just like ice cream with your cake, or, you know, it's an apple pie with the ice cream, whatever, you know.
But you want an apple pie with your ice cream, or you want ice cream with your whatever.
Yeah, you do want if
you do ice want cream, the award.
If the ice cream is available, hell yeah, yeah, I want the ice cream absolutely. On my pie. But if it's not, I'm going to enjoy the pie anyway.
Yeah. With right? the Oscars and myself, I'd say if you're in the top six, you already won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To be nominated? Yeah. To be nominated? Yeah. That's pretty remarkable.
There's a lot of people who didn't get nominated.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder how much of that is writing. Because you were talking about how it was that role.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You know? Like, because the actor's just a vessel for the script.
For the script. Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was a well-written role. So, of course, she won the Oscar, right?
I think it's a combination of those things.
Sometimes just the universe comes together with things, you know, it's the right time. The timing is right or whatever. But I don't know. I think we give away too many awards.
Well, what would you – so I give every guest a get-out-of-fail-free card. What would you do with it if you could do it? So, like, I used to say stand-up comedy, but now I'm doing it. But there's a lot of failure involved. So is there something that you would do, a hobby, a passion, a career?
Oh, we're on the topic. I was really into theater in high school. And when I was in college, I helped out with a children's theater. I was a stage manager for a children's theater. And then I just sort of let it go. And I was pretty good. And I wonder if I could still do it. So yeah, give me a role in a movie.
What would you be? Marvel villain?
A Marvel villain? Oh, thanks. A 53-year-old. Yeah, why not? Why not? Hey, no, I'd want to be in something more sci-fi. I mean, Marvel is fantasy. I want to be.
I don't like Marvel movies. That's just what I usually say.
I'd want to be something more sci-fi, right?
You could be some
space thing.
You could be a time traveler.
A time traveler would be cool, too. But something, I want to be in a spaceship.
Yeah.
I want to be something on a spaceship.
Hell yeah.
And it can be an alien. I wouldn't mind being an alien on a spaceship.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That'd
yeah.
be fun.
I think it'd be awesome. I feel like I wouldn't be able to learn my lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I can't even remember my jokes when I get up on stage for stand up. So I'm like, I don't know how good I'll be at
but
memorizing exactly what to say.
The reason why I have a podcast is because when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. And then I thought, oh, it might be fun to be a radio DJ. Mm-hmm. And then I started a podcast because I wasn't a radio DJ and podcasting. This was 10 years ago. Ben, I've had a podcast for 10 years. So that's I crazy. Started my podcast 10 years ago after I had a YouTube talk show for 2 years before the podcast. I mm-hmm. did all that because you can. And it's something I always wanted to do. Right.
Yeah.
So
totally
failure. Right.
Yeah. Did you do college radio?
No, I actually had. So in college, I had two friends that worked at the radio station. And I don't know what prevented me from saying, hey, get me a job. It was a small town. So it was a local radio station.
Yeah.
Right. And I could have easily gotten a job there.
I did college radio.
Did you?
I did a college radio show. Yeah.
This wasn't a college. This was the local radio station, but it was a very small town.
Well, it was a very small school. I mean, like you had to be in the vicinity of school to like hear, but the cafeteria was always listening and whatever. But yeah, that was fun. And my first real shot at doing anything like that, but it was just me and my roommate, the Ben and Mark show.
I love that. I love that. When I was in high school, I grew up in the Monterey Bay of California, and Robert Louis mm-hmm. Stevenson is a very hoity-toity private school in the south part of the Bay. And they had a radio station. The high school had a radio station, and they always had the best music. So mm-hmm. that's the station I would listen to. I wouldn't listen to the local station where my friends worked. I listened to the high school radio station because I liked British. I liked New Wave, and they played pop and R&B.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I loved it. It's really cool to see behind the scenes. We even had like some guy come in and play on the acoustic and stuff. I mean, it was a fun time, and I think I'd want to try. I was just in LA, and I did stand up in Hollywood actually.
Oh, how fun.
On Friday. So like a little less than a week ago. But I was thinking I would want to try at some point. Acting and see how it would be, but the memorizing the lines would be the tough part for me for sure.
Yesterday,
not just the acting, obviously. I don't know what the hell I would do. I don't have any background in it, so you have theater background, you'd know maybe.
But it was so long ago, dude. I don't remember any of it. I mean, and the 2 years I did it where it was, you know, it was semi-professional theater, I was a stage manager for a children's theater. What was kind of cool though was some of those kids were on the local PBS station, there was a children's television show, and some of them were on that show. Those kids loved me because I was this 21 year old, you know, with a convertible, and their parents all trusted me. And so they would like, Candace, can you take us to the zoo? Sure, I'll take you to the zoo. So I had to be hanging out with all these 12 year olds, which was fun.
Do you think you can handle acting in a green screen? Because if you're in space in a spaceship, you're going to need to be.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Dealing with fictional aliens.
How is that any different than having a green screen for my podcast? Right. It's not.
Do you have one?
No, I don't. I don't because I like my artwork on the back of my wall. I know that most
people. So it's different in the fact that you don't do it.
Yeah. But most, you know, most people say don't put artwork on your back. You have a nice clean wall, non-distracting. I'm like, screw that. I want people to see what I am. Yeah.
I didn't do this on purpose though. I moved here in January and I haven't put anything up on the walls yet, but I usually would have, actually I've got an alternate setup downstairs that I'm using for the Excel training right now. So like my failure license plate, all my other background stuff I have down in the basement.
How fun.
But yeah. And I just got off a cruise. The last thing I'll say is I just got off a cruise of dentists. Smiles at Sea is what it was called. I'm not a dentist. I don't even like going to the dentist, but I'm doing a lot of stuff. And I'm going to be doing a public speaking competition for the dentistry industry in August called Dentistry's Got Talent. And I'm going to be competing against William Hung and some other people.
Is it
like a TED Talk off, basically?
How did you get hooked up with the dental industry?
So at Podfest, I met DJ Smiles, who is also, he used to be in dentistry, but he does this thing called Smiles at Sea, which we just had last week. And it's a dentistry industry event. And so they're all getting continuing education credits for it. But I don't do anything in dentistry. So I was just hanging out during the day and just doing a lot of networking. But I'm going to be competing in New Orleans in August. And so basically it's everyone does a 10-minute TED Talk kind of thing. And it's for a larger audience of dentists and judges. And then if you beat your little cohort, which would be like a group of like five people, so it's 30 total. If you get to the next round, it's just judges and they're all speaking scouts. And you have to do a 5-minute one there. And I was talking to the person who won in 2019. They used to be a dentist. Now they're a full-time international speaker. And they're going to coach me for free. Lauren King is her name. L-O-R-E-N King. And so I've been doing all sorts of weird networking and stuff. And then I missed two flights this past weekend. So a lot of failure around my travel plans, including falling asleep at the gate and then waking up. It was a different city than Kansas City. I was like, no, I already missed a different flight yesterday.
Oh, no. Wow.
So wow. I learned a bit. And I promise I would tell everyone never to fly Spirit. So if anyone's up there, I did not have a great time on Spirit. So take that.
I wish you'd asked me first. I would have told you that.
They're not a sponsor, right?
No. Yeah.
I know. Everyone told me that.
Spend the extra $100, people.
Yeah.
You know,
you will, anyways, on the bags. And yeah. You won't realize it.
Just spend the extra $100. Don't even, they don't deserve you as a client.
I made it back on a United flight. I still had another Spirit one leaving later that I could have taken. I wasn't going to make it back to my concert in time, and I had a meet and greet ticket to a concert. So it was just such a, and I did all this work and then I fell asleep in front of the gate and then I had to get another one. I was like, oh my, but I made it with 5 minutes to spare for the meet and greet. So.
Wow. That's impressive.
Literally 5 minutes. So.
Yeah. You know what? In the long run, you'll probably figure out that there is a reason why.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I've learned from you today is just say yes. Say yes to opportunities.
To more things, for sure. Yeah. And expand your comfort zone. Do one thing every day that, like, you know, is a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Talk to a stranger, whatever the thing is. Maybe that's not a great one if you're a kid and don't talk to strangers or whatever. But, you know, do it safely, you know, where, like, live life. Put the bowling alley bumpers down for, like, you know, one frame or something like that and see what happens.
Yeah. Vinny Podestivo invited me to a networking event and you were there, and that's how I met you.
Yes.
So I said, of course, if Vinny invites you to something, you say yes, right?
Yeah. If Vinny does anything, I'll say yes. I'll be like, I don't care what it is. Sure. I'm down for it.
So that's how I met you. So I said yes to an opportunity and you were there. So if you could pick one marketing tool, tip, or technique, what would it be?
Is to look at sales instead of, like any kind of financial transaction or anything related to making money or anything like that. I'd say is to look at sales as earning the right to make a recommendation. So finding out enough about somebody so that you can recommend something that they can use, whether it's your service or someone else's, but like until you find a need that you can fit or like that you can help fulfill, you shouldn't be trying to sell somebody something until you know that they need whatever it is you have. So the objective of sales would be to get to the point where you understand enough to then make that recommendation if that's what you're trying to do. And that's been the best way for me to try to figure out how to reframe, because I don't like feeling like a car salesman or like I'm doing anything because of money. So it's more like, well, I know the thing I'm going to provide is more worth more than it costs, you know, because I'm giving more value. As long as I can figure out if they need that thing, then I can start, you know, talking about it. But I usually never get in sales mode. So I'm just trying to figure out ways of hacking my brain to like eventually mention whatever it is that I do.
I think you've done a pretty good job of selling yourself, though, just by being who you are.
Well, thank you.
I think that is the best sales advice I've ever heard.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So thank you for that. I foresee me teaching that to somebody else in the near future. Because that one of my secrets to success is that if I learn something, I teach it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because why not share everything you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I am always about lifelong learning, and I love educating people and like teaching them something that they didn't know that can make their lives better.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. This is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
My grandmother, Nana. So she's 92 years old now, and she was on my podcast. She was episode 51. And then I recently released a blooper reel on April 1st of all of our, not all of them, because there's so many bloopers, but her and I's conversation was 6 Zoom calls over a year that I then edited together. So there's plenty of mistakes and ridiculous things. So this year for April Fool's, I decided to release some of the wackier moments from that one. But I talk to her every Sunday, and she's just one of the bright beacons of light in my life.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Ben Courier. If you love this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. I'm your host, Candace Ridardi, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.